Welcome to Managing Cutoff. I am Anthony Colangelo, and I've got something a bit different for you this week. It was kind of a slow week. I didn't have one major thing I wanted to dissect here on the show like I normally do. So I was thinking about doing one of those short episodes I do from time to time. But I've had a couple of people ask for a little preview of what I'm doing over on Patreon every single week, the Miko Headlines feed. If you support at $3 or more a month, you get access to a special RSS feed where you can hear these short headline shows every single Friday. I run through all the news of the week, talk a little bit about the little stories that don't make their way into the main podcast. So with a week like this, with the kind of end of year stuff that's wrapping up, I figured it'd be cool to let you hear a little bit of that and let you listen in on one of these headline shows. So I'm going to just run through the headlines like I do in that feed. This is actually the same exact headlines feed recording that's going in that one and going in this main feed here. So if you like this sort of thing, head over to Patreon, $3 a month or more, and you get access to this every single week, week in, week out. The boring ones, the exciting ones, every single story. It's a great way to stay up with the space news. So I hope you enjoy it, and let's dive in. First story of the week, Friday, December 1st. I think this classifies as hot drama. It's been a while since we had some hot drama, but this probably is the closest thing to hot. I feel like I need a Jim Cramer hot drama button that I can just slam in these situations. But Friday, Elon Musk maybe announced the Falcon Heavy payload in a series of tweets. I'll read them out here. There's two tweets that he sent out on Friday. Falcon Heavy to launch next month from Apollo 11 pad at the Cape. Will have double thrust of next largest rocket, guaranteed to be exciting one way or another. Payload will be my Midnight Cherry Tesla Roadster playing Space Oddity. Destination is Mars orbit, will be in deep space for a billion years or so if it doesn't blow up on ascent. He sent these out. Everyone started speculating. Reporters started trying to confirm. He told The Verge that he made it up and that it's fake. He told everyone else that it's real. Drama ensues, whether he just doesn't like The Verge because of something that happened in the past or whatever it is. We don't really know for sure if this is real or not. There's a lot of questions. You know, what would this payload actually be? Would it just be a Tesla? Would there be a communications package that they could send some stuff back? Would they get deep space network time from NASA? I don't know. There's so many things in this story that I hate. It's the typical Elon thing where he has everyone focus on one thing and then distracts them with something else that is less impressive. I felt that way at IAC 2016 when he had this whole vision for how Mars is realistic and then took it to Europa. Felt the same way in 2017 at IAC when it was, we've downscaled, we've made it more realistic, but also point-to-point travel that let everyone say, but what about? And then now with Falcon Heavy, it's, you know, they're about to have the largest operating rocket that the world has access to. And he's going to, you know, distract from that very strong message by doing something like this, which, you know, he's free to do this kind of thing. I think it is a statement in a lot of ways if he were to do something like this, send something like this, so symbolic of Elon Musk's companies and his attitude in general, out to, you know, what he called Mars orbit. A lot of people are taking that since, you know, who knows what it would be, but a lot of people think it would just be, you know, sending this on a transfer orbit to go as far out as Mars, but, you know, come in as close as Earth, wouldn't do any maneuvers to go into Martian orbit or anything like that. But yeah, it would be a Musky statement. It would be something that everyone would be watching. It would capture a lot of headlines and it would let people know what he's doing, what SpaceX is doing over there. So in that way, I get it. But overall, it's just an annoying story to me because of all of the different layers there. So we'll see if this actually does come to fruition. Interesting to note that Space Launch Complex 40 is back for SpaceX. They've static fired there that we'll talk about later on. Zuma has moved from 39A over to pad 40, which clears the way for 39A to be all Falcon Heavy all the time, which points to the fact that Falcon Heavy is getting close and does have a shot at launching this January. So we'll see where that falls out. Then on Saturday, December 2nd, Russia launched a Soyuz 21B carrying LOTOS S1, which is a spy satellite from the Plesetsk Cosmodrome. This is just a launch 4 days after the Soyuz Fregat failure that we talked about last week. No Fregat upper stage on this flight, so they launched it anyway. And even if there was, they probably would have launched because so far it seems like that launch failed because of a new launch site issue, or an issue launching that rocket from a new launch site, not something inherent to Fregat itself. But either way, they got this flight off The satellite that is now up in orbit is officially named Cosmos 2524, and it seems like this is some sort of electronic intelligence gathering satellite. Its ultimate destination, based on satellites that are like this in the past, is a 900-kilometer circular orbit, highly inclined. Initially, it was tracked at 67 degrees inclination after launch. We're not obviously sure whether that will position to some other inclination after the fact. It's only 4 degrees away from a Molniya of some sort, so I guess it's not out of the question that that could be the case, but it seems unlikely. So we don't really know much about it because it is a military launch. And on that topic, also on Saturday, China launched a Long March 2D from the Jiquan Satellite Launch Center. After the launch was a success, China announced that the satellite was named Land Surveying Satellite 1, but NASAspaceflight.com has some sort of intel that says that this satellite is part of the Yaogan series of military satellites, and this is Yaogan 31, some sort of observation satellite doing something militaristic. Obviously, not a lot of info from China specifically, but also because this is a military launch, we don't learn much about this or the Russian launch that happened. So Saturday, filled with military launches from the Eastern Hemisphere. On Monday, December 4th, ULA announced that, ULA and L3 Technologies announced together that L3 will be providing avionics for Vulcan Centaur. This has an estimated total of $1 billion over 10 years to provide these avionics for Vulcan Centaur. And obviously, there's not too much that we can glean from this announcement, but it does show that progress is continuing steadily on Vulcan. And right now, Vulcan is undergoing its critical design review this month. Last October, Tory Bruno responded to me on Twitter and said that Vulcan's CDR, critical design review, is happening this December. And today I checked with him again on Twitter, and he said that CDR is underway and going well. So very good progress, it seems, on Vulcan so far. Hopefully we hear the engine down select news pretty soon. That would be a kind of fun end of year thing to hear from ULA. But, you know, awarding an avionics deal means that they are serious about Vulcan Centaur, specifically Centaur 5, the upgrades that we've talked about in the past. So good sign for ULA there on Monday. Also on Monday, GOES-S, NOAA's next geostationary weather satellite, has been delivered to Cape Canaveral for launch preparations. This is the second of four new generation GOES satellites. The first was GOES-R, which launched pretty recently. That is now GOES-16 on orbit. And this GOES-S satellite is due to launch on March 1st from Space Launch Complex 41 at Cape Canaveral on an Atlas V 541. So now that it's delivered down there, they'll be doing checkouts, tests, fueling the satellite. And in February, it'll be moved to ULA's vertical integration facility at Pad 41, and it'll be integrated with its launch vehicle there, then headed out to the pad for launch in March. And the last story on Monday, NASA announced an announcement. NASA seeks proposals for space resources technologies is the headline from a Space News article by Jeff Faust. I'm just going to read a chunk of it here because he summed it up best. And this wasn't a typical NASA press release. As I said, it was an announcement of announcement. So it's kind of buried in government documentation. So I'm going to read this chunk from Jeff Faust. NASA issued an appendix to its Next Space Technologies for Exploration Partnerships 2, the Next Step 2 program, calling for proposals on studies and technology development efforts related to what's known as in-situ resource utilization, or ISRU. The program will cover both trade studies as well as development of key components and subsystems needed to extract water, carbon dioxide, and other volatiles from the Martian atmosphere, the soils of Mars, the Moon, and asteroids. Such resources can then be used for life support or as propellants, reducing the reliance future expeditions have on resources transported there at significant expense from Earth. NASA plans to make the bulk of the awards in one of three tracks devoted to development and testing of components for ISRU systems. In its solicitation, the agency said it expects to make between one and three such awards, valued at $250,000 to $500,000 per year for up to 3 years. As with other Next Step projects like the Deep Space Habitat and things like that, NASA is expecting companies to share in the costs of the projects. So this is interesting for a lot of reasons. Obviously, we are still waiting on the actual announcement of this, not just the intent to announce something like this. But it's going to be very interesting to see who throws their hat in the ring for this development. You know, is SpaceX going to go hard for this since it's so tied to their ultimate goals? Is Blue Origin, because of their exploration goals? Is ULA, because of their Cislunar 1000 kind of idea and extracting, minerals from all around and, creating an economy in cislunar space? Could we see, you know, other companies, obviously the old steadies like Boeing and Lockheed and companies like that? I'm sure Lockheed would want to get in the game with their Mars base camp idea. But it's going to be interesting to see who goes for this award and who wins this and who develops this. This is something that SpaceX would have very high up on a chalkboard somewhere in Hawthorne, because it's one of those things where they can get a contract to deliver services for NASA and get a little extra funding for something that is so relevant to their own goals. So I'd be shocked if they didn't at least put their hat in the ring. And quite honestly, it would be, you know, we'll see what they propose, but I would hope that that's something that we would see selected in this sort of thing, since, you know, NASA wants this to be something that the private sector and the public sector come together on and work on. So if they see someone like SpaceX that has such goals, you know, it would be good to take advantage of that. We'll obviously also be looking for planetary resources, deep space industries, the asteroid mining crowd to get in on something like this, since this is also relevant to what they're going to need to do once they do actually get out to an asteroid. So I'm sure this will be a topic in the not too distant future. The other thing is, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we've been wanting to see from NASA with regards to Mars exploration and their ultimate goal of getting humans to Mars. We've wanted to see this kind of thing for quite a while, and some true work on systems that are fundamentals for almost any architecture that heads out to Mars with humans or, you know, anything like that. This is the kind of stuff that we want to see from them. So this is a very good sign. Interestingly enough, as they turn away from Mars back to the moon, they're finally, you know, starting up an ISRU deal. Obviously, still need this kind of stuff for the moon in a lot of architectures. But it is interesting that we haven't seen this as of yet. But it is a good sign overall, so I'm very hopeful for where that will go. And on Tuesday, December 5th, Blue Origin and Xerox PARC announced a partnership focused on R&D in space. I'm going to read a little bit here from PARC's press release on this. The partnership will leverage PARC's expertise in technology innovation and Blue Origin's reusable suborbital rocket, New Shepard, to push new frontiers in four areas of technology R&D: advanced manufacturing, energy systems, human-machine interaction, and predictive analytics. The two will work together in accelerating research in space to market joint R&D opportunities to PARC's global 1,000 partners and government agencies. The ultimate goal is to include an advanced technology R&D experiment on one of Blue Origin's upcoming suborbital flights. We'll see what comes out of this. Interesting that Blue Origin is making this sort of announcement now. I've heard a couple of things that make me believe that there's a New Shepard launch in the not-too-distant future. So keep your eyes peeled. We've heard before the end of the year from Blue Origin a couple of times in the last couple months, and I've heard a couple of things from some interesting places that is the case, and we might be seeing that pretty soon here. This is really a fun story for me because my day job is software development, specifically around iOS software, and, you know, Xerox PARC is kind of one of those legendary places if you're in any sort of software development. So it's cool to see my two worlds collide here in this case. I'm not sure, you know, who PARC is connecting Blue Origin to or vice versa, but it'll be interesting to watch what kind of companies get involved with research on Blue Origin flights from a partnership like this. It could be non-traditional stuff that we really haven't seen before. So that's quite interesting, especially, you know, as Blue Origin gets closer to commercial flights of New Shepard, you want to see them start building out these kind of partnerships to get a nice funnel of clients in for flights on New Shepard. So it's a very good sign leading into 2018 that should be a productive year for Blue Origin with regards to New Shepard. On Wednesday, December 6th, Orbital ATK's OA-8E Cygnus spacecraft departed the ISS. After it left, it headed up to a circular 450-kilometer orbit, which is higher than the ISS's orbit, and then it went and deployed 14 CubeSats from its NanoRax external deployers. With this deployment, NanoRax has now deployed over 200 satellites from all of their platforms, which is a huge, huge deal. Reading a bit from the NanoRax press release, on this external Cygnus deployment mission, NanoRax deployed 14 satellites with customers including Spire, Asgardia, Tyvak, and NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and more. Also a part of this external Cygnus manifest were the Aerospace Corporation's Optical Communications and Sensor Demonstration AeroCube 7B/C satellites, which are water-based propulsion CubeSats. Now, this is water-based, not in the way of the hydrothruster that we talked about last week, but it's actually just squeezing water out of its CubeSat to just give it a little bit of a burst. in a certain direction to, you know, carry out its mission. So it's kind of interesting to see these sort of things that are slightly different than the general run-of-the-mill deployment of CubeSats from any NanoRacks deployer. So fun little bit of detail there. This Cygnus is going to free fly for a little bit and then will burn up in the atmosphere as all Cygnuses do. And we did learn a little tidbit this week that there's a future Cygnus mission coming up, I think, next year that will actually have the ability to fly for up to a year in space after it leaves the ISS for a long-duration mission separate from the ISS entirely. So it's pretty cool to note, you know, what orbital ATK is pushing Cygnus to do after these ISS flights. Also on Wednesday, December 6th, ULA announced that the launch of NROLL 47 from Vandenberg Air Force Base on a Delta IV Medium Plus 5-2 has been delayed from December 13th until no earlier than January 10th. This is the first Delta IV flight that is flying with common avionics, and they need more time to test and validate that everything is up to spec with those. This is a new avionics package that is common across Atlas V and Delta IV, with the goal to streamline processes a bit between both of those vehicles. They just need a little bit more time to test it out, but it's a good sign that they're, you know, finally getting around to this launch with common avionics. That should help them a bit in the transition from these two vehicles over to Vulcan. There are two more Delta IV medium launches after this one, both from Cape Canaveral, and that will be it for this line of rockets. Delta IV Heavy will continue to fly until it's not needed anymore, until it can be replaced. But the single core Delta IV flights are going away. So if you want to get down to see one of those, either, well, this is your last shot out of California. There's two more coming up from Cape Canaveral that you should put on your calendar. And finally on Wednesday, SpaceX, I mentioned this a little while back, they completed a static fire at Space Launch Complex 40. So SLC 40 is back, baby. It took quite a while to get this thing back up online. I guess not too long when you consider the damage that was done to it in that AMOS 6 incident last year. But this mission is the CRS-13 mission for SpaceX. That is now set for December 12th. That was delayed due to some pad issues they had. And then after that delay, they had to find a new date that would work for the range and for the ISS schedule with the Cygnus departure and all that. There was a lot of moving pieces there. They have it set for December 12th with it back up on the 13th now. And this is flying the first reuse core for a NASA mission. The core previously flew CRS-11. The Dragon on top previously flew CRS-6. So that's a good sign for SpaceX's and the reuse mission that they've got a lot of this rocket flying for a second time. After this one, the last SpaceX launch of the year is Iridium 4, which is set for December 22nd out at Vandenberg Air Force Base. And a quick note, if you want to keep track of all these launches as they move around, great website, rocketlaunch.live. by our good friend Pat. You hear him in the producer segment of this show. He runs that site, keeps it up to date, and it's my favorite thing for browsing through launch schedules. Very searchable, very browsable. Check it out if you need to keep up with moving schedules like this all the time. He does a great job updating that, keeping that thing up to date, and it's where I go to get all of these things organized when I'm pulling the headlines together for these shows. On Thursday, December 7th, NASA selects three companies to develop FabLab prototypes. Reading a bit from a NASA press release here. NASA is taking the next step in development of a space-based on-demand fabrication capability by partnering with three U.S. companies under NASA's Next Step program to create prototypes. The selected companies are Interlog Corporation, TechShot Inc., and Tethers Unlimited. Talked about Tethers last week because of the Hydros thruster that they delivered the first flight unit for, and this week they're getting selected for quite an interesting thing from NASA here. So continuing from that press release, combined funding for the awards is approximately $10.2 million. These companies will have 18 months to deliver the prototype, after which NASA will select the partners to further mature the technologies. Earlier this year, NASA sought proposals for ground-based prototypes of a multi-material fabrication lab, or Fab Lab, under Appendix B of the Next Step 2 broad agency announcement. With these new partnerships, the agency is prepared to take the effort to the next level. So this is prototypes for some advanced manufacturing in space. Tethers Unlimited put an interesting photo up on their Facebook page. I've got a link to that in the show notes that has some annotations on what they're working on with regards to this that I would highly recommend checking out. And finally, the last story of the week, Friday, December 8th, Friday, New Zealand time, that is. Rocket Lab delayed their next launch by a day. So they're still going to roll out the vehicle on Friday, New Zealand time, but they'll have delayed the launch until Saturday, New Zealand time, which is Friday night here in the U.S. So I was hoping we'd get to talk about this launch this week, but looks like we're going to have to wait another week to find out what happened or at least another day, but another week until I can talk about it for real. But that is it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this sort of thing. But before we go, I want to say a huge thank you to everyone over at patreon.com/Miko. There are 130 of you over there supporting this show week in, week out. I am so thankful for all of your support. And this particular episode is produced by 23 executive producers. Chris, Mike, Pat, Matt, George, Brad, Ryan, Jameson, Nadim, Peter, Donald, Lee, Jasper, Chris, Warren, Bob, Brian, Russell, and 5 anonymous executive producers. They make this show happen every single week. I could not do it without their support and everyone else over at patreon.com/Miko. That's where you can go if you want this headline show every single Friday. $3 a month or more gets you access to it, gets you a special RSS link to drop right in your player where you're listening to this right now. So I hope you check it out. Hope you consider it if you have not yet. But otherwise, thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you next week.